Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Lakers beaten by the Wizards last night in OT, 127-124. Now, that in and of itself is not a big problem. I mean, they lost to the Heat on Saturday. Again, that in and of itself, not a reason to panic. But they did lose to the Nets on Thursday night. Again, in and of itself, not a reason to freak out. But when you string those three losses together and you combine them into a three-game losing streak that the Lakers have right now, then it's a little more concerning. And then you take that three-game losing streak and you make that part of them losing four out of five. Then you start to actually grip a little bit, especially when last night's loss did come in overtime. That's a game where they had a 17-point lead in the second half. When you're looking to stop the bleeding, that's something that can't happen, but it did. For instance, you finished that off last night in regulation, and then LeBron does not have to play nearly 16 of the final 17 minutes of that game. You finished that off last night, and then you don't give up even more ground to the Utah Jazz. But they were not able to do so. Again, they're going to be a different team without their second and third leading scorers. That's pretty obvious. Anybody who thought that they wouldn't be. Anybody who thought they could just keep rolling right along without Anthony Davis and Dennis Schroeder was just begging. So the issue is not the fact that they've lost three straight or that they've lost four out of five. What it is they could have used a win last night. That would have been awfully nice. They could have used a win last night, and they were up by 17, and they still couldn't finish. Once again, you finish that game, you get yourself a little breathing room. Finish that game, and then you don't have to answer questions after the game about how it felt to have Bradley Beal stab you in the chest on three straight possessions.
20 turnovers for LA. Here's Beal down. Got it in his hand. Bradley Beal scores. 26 points now for the Wizards off those Laker turnovers.
Three straight possessions, and then followed that up with this circus shot.
Two-point game. Beal and Westbrook going to work. Beal almost lost the handle, gets it back. And wow, what a finish with a left hand by Bradley Beal.
And then he chases that with another bucket for good measure. And then you've got Russell Westbrook jumping in there, ripping the knife out of Beal's hand, and then doing a little carving of his own.
Westbrook to inbound. They get it to Bertans. Now Westbrook has it, and it's got to be a continuation. They knew Westbrook was the guy they wanted to foul. It was a foul by LeBron James.
All right, so at the end of the game, you're looking at Beal, and you're looking at Westbrook. Beal goes 33-7-6. Westbrook goes 32-14-9. That'll happen. Great players will do that. Again, in and of itself, not a reason for Laker fans to panic and start jamming their car flags back into storage. But what I'm saying is this. Pretty much exactly what I said and warned Laker fans about when AD went down. The chance to win number 18 is not gone. It just got tougher, a lot tougher, because the Lakers are now going to have to exert even more energy in the regular season, coming off a short offseason in a year where they're trying to repeat. Repeating as champ again is one of the toughest things to do in all of sports. Doing it on a shortened offseason is even tougher. Doing it on a shortened offseason with your second best player dealing with a leg injury makes it really difficult. And now the team has to answer questions about whether or not LeBron is playing too much, whether or not LeBron is carrying too much of a load, something that LeBron obviously does not want to hear about.
I mean, I'm resting now. I'm resting when I get in my car and head home. I'm resting when I get home. I'll rest tomorrow. You know, I think this whole narrative of, LeBron needs more rest, or I should take more rest, or I should take time here, it's become a lot bigger than what it actually really is. I've never talked about it. I don't talk about it. I don't believe in it. Fast turnaround from last season, and we all wish we could have more rest. But, you know, I'm here to work, and I'm here to punch my clock in and be available to my teammates. And if I'm hurt or if I'm not feeling well, then we can look at it then. But I have nothing but honest people around me. But I'm also honest with myself as well. Me having the love for the game and me being able to be available to my teammates is more important than anything.
So, of course, this guy's not asking out of games or looking for his load to be managed. That's not who he is. That's not how he's wired. But sometimes you do have to protect the guy from the guy, especially that guy. And if you're going to ask that guy to work overtime, you better get a win. Otherwise, you're depreciating that asset even further, and you have nothing to show for it. Because while the Lakers have lost 3 in a row and 4 of 5, the team they're looking up at, the Utah Jazz, are straight abusing fools every single night. And look who LA has to deal with tomorrow night. That's right, the same Utah Jazz. Now, you can't win a championship in February, but you can lose one because you can make the road to that title a lot tougher. Right now, the Lakers would have to beat the Clippers in the playoffs for a chance to face the Jazz, while Utah gets to wait for those two teams to beat the hell out of each other and then take on the battered winner. For the last time, losing last night was not a backbreaker. There is no reason to smash the panic button yet, Laker fan, but if I were you, I would know where it is. Especially since you know Utah is looking to break your dudes' faces tomorrow night. Would have been nice to win that one. Would have been nice to stop the bleeding with a 17-point lead. And they couldn't do it. Leonard Hamilton. Leonard, it's so good to have you back. You and I did speak at the beginning of the year, but let me check in with you as always. How are you doing and how is your life right about now, Coach?
Well, Jim, obviously I'm probably like a lot of coaches, just trying to stay safe, trying to get through the season, trying to make sure that your kids are being in good shape from a basketball playing standpoint, and that we are prepared to see whether or not we can finish the season without a lot of issues.
I got that. Leonard Hamilton's joining us. All right, so why don't we talk about what you have right now? You have won 3 straight, including a 21-point win over number 7 Virginia. That was the Cavaliers' worst conference loss in 4 years. So what do you make of how your team is playing at this point in the season?
Well, the good thing about our team, Jim, is that we are still developing. You know, we're not quite there yet. You know, we still got a feeling of area where we can improve in. We've been fortunate, you know, to have some experienced guys and some new that are changing roles, and we have some new guys that are coming in, learning the system. So the good thing about this team, we're finding ways to win while we're still developing.
We are talking to Leonard Hamilton. I'm going to talk about the new guys in a minute, but what's interesting to me is I mentioned off the top, the program had its first ACC regular season title in school history last year. You're back in first place in the ACC again this year, but the thing is, you're doing that having had 2 lottery picks in the 2020 draft and a third player who's with the Jazz right now. How do you explain the fact that you're filling up the NBA with that kind of talent, but the team just keeps getting better?
I think I have a great staff of guys who develop and skilled developers, and our guys are improving and getting better. And so the guys who are role players 1 year move into different roles the following year, and they're prepared mentally, emotionally, you know, to step into those roles. And we've been a little inconsistent this year because some of our new guys are kind of learning and growing, and then our new guys who are our old guys who are moving into different roles are still adjusting. So if we can just, like I said earlier, if we can keep winning while we're developing, I think we can be a pretty good team once we get into the postseason.
Florida State head basketball coach Leonard Hamilton is back on the show. You know, one of the terms that's used around the program is, quote, new blood, as in the guys are the new bloods. Now, when you keep having success like that, at a certain point, do you become blue bloods, or do you want to maintain that new blood mentality instead?
Well, we're probably about 75 years behind some of the blue blood statuses in our league. When you look at our conference, you know, with North Carolina, Duke, Notre Dame, Louisville, Syracuse, some of the top winning programs in the history of college basketball, those guys got 65, 70 years of successful experience ahead of us. When Florida State was in the Dixie Conference and Independent, and then the Metro, these guys were in the Big East and the ACC. So we still have a lot of ground to work up to catch up on. We're not going to ever catch up with some of these schools. So we coined our own phrase. The Blue Bloods are not inviting us to the party. So, you know, we crashing it as Blue Bloods. So, as New Bloods. And that's kind of, it gives our kids a little area of their own that they can feel proud of.
I like that. Are you feeling stressed out? Probably so. Most people are. Listen, don't let the stress of daily life weigh on your body. Whether you're an elite athlete or somebody like me, just trying to make it through the day tension-free, Theragun can help. Theragun is the handheld percussive therapy device that releases your deepest muscle tension using a scientifically calibrated combo of depth, speed, and power. And it's as quiet as an electric toothbrush. This product is incredible. The Gen 4 Theragun doesn't just feel good, it gets to the source of the pain by releasing tension using Theragun's signature percussive therapy, which goes 60% deeper than vibration alone. Whether you want to treat your muscle tension from working out, or maybe you have an injury, or it's just the stresses of everyday life, there is no substitute for the Theragun Gen 4. Theragun is trusted by 250 professional sports teams like Real Madrid and elite athletes like Paul George, DeAndre Hopkins, Maria Sharapova, hundreds of thousands of customers, and myself. I have mine. I absolutely love this product. Try Theragun for 30 days, starting at only $199. Go to Theragun.com/Rome right now and get your Gen 4 Theragun today. This product is sensational. Go to Theragun.com/Rome right now. Get your Gen 4 Theragun today. The product is absolutely amazing. Once again, Theragun.com/Rome, R-O-M-E. Theragun.com/Rome. Leonard Hamilton's joining us. Now, one of your assistants, C.Y. Young, told The Athletic, quote, "Culture doesn't graduate." To me, another great line. You and I have talked about culture in the past. How do you make sure that it doesn't graduate, that it doesn't leave when you are sending guys to the NBA and guys overseas?
Well, there's no doubt that our culture is very strong because we're different. You know, we rotate more players. We play at a faster pace offensively. We still are picking up 94 feet on the defensive end. And we're moving the ball. We're making passes. And we're playing unselfish. And so that requires you to have a deep rotation. So guys who come to our program come in with an understanding, this is what I'm looking for and this is what I want. We just try not to put a square peg in a round hole. We try to recruit guys who fit who we are and it's working. We try to avoid putting the kid in a situation that he doesn't particularly feel comfortable with. Some kids need to go somewhere where they're playing 35, 37 minutes even when they're tired. Well, our guys play through exhaustion, and they actually come out, and they cheer for the guy who goes in and replaces them.
All right, so we're talking about culture here. Leonard Hamilton's my guest. And then part of that culture is the fact that, as Young says, you're not going to recruit every single five-star guy. Not everybody, to your point, Leonard, is going to be a good fit for the program. And you talk about humility. You and I have talked in the past, for instance, about Scottie Barnes and his humility back at the start of the season. So what do you make of how his game has grown over the course of this season?
I don't think there's anybody in college basketball that's had more of a transition than Scottie Barnes. He played power forward his entire life. In other words, when most guys who were point guards at this level, they was playing point guard for their team when they were 8 years old. Scottie Barnes has made the transition seamlessly because he has a high IQ, he's humble, he's eager to learn, he's watching, he's listening to his teammates, and he is really doing a fantastic job. And he hasn't even scratched the surface of his potential. He's made the adjustment better than anybody I've ever seen in my life to go from power forward to point guard on a top 10 ranked team in the country that's number one in a Power 5 conference. That speaks for itself.
Now, I know you're not going to make it about you, and I would never look for you to make it about you, but you said recently, quote, "I don't have a whole lot of original ideas. I try to steal as much as possible." Personally, I'm not really buying this notion that you don't have a whole lot of original ideas, but who are some of the people or some of the teams that maybe you have borrowed ideas from?
Well, see, I've been very fortunate, Jim, in my career to have worked for some outstanding people. My first guy I worked for is the late Lake Kelly at Austin Peay State University. I think he was a genius, just an absolute total genius in his philosophy of basketball, and I was very fortunate to have a chance to work with him. At the beginning of my coaching career, a detailed guy who gave guys freedom, who played an unbelievable, aggressive style of basketball. And we had a chance to go in there and turn Austin Peay's program around. And then I left from there and went to Kentucky, you know, the winningest program in the history of college basketball, where I picked up other ideas. And John Thompson and watching how he played, and Nolan Richardson in 40 minutes from hell, system that he had, and I was Patino. Eddie Sutton. I mean, I have picked up things along the way, and I remember even watching John Wooten coach as a youngster. And more than anything else, more than anything else. You know, I love how Red Auerbach played with a deep rotation that some of his Hall of Fame people came off the bench. And so I tried to pick up things that I think work with my philosophy, and that's why we're utilizing the system and style that we have today.
And
a lot of guys are attracted to our program because they like the way we play, and some guys want to be in a program where everybody gets touches and they, and the culture is predicated on unselfish spirit.
I was going to jump in there, Leonard, and say, and you have a lot of that depth right now. For instance, in that win over Pittsburgh, you had 10 guys play at least 9 minutes. Now, you mentioned all the guys that have influenced you. You have influenced a number of others. You're not just sending talent to the NBA. As an example, Dennis Gates had led Cleveland State to the Horizon League regular season title. He was with you 8 years at Florida State. How much pride is there for you to see him having the levels of success that he's having with his own program now?
Well, there's no doubt that we talk on a regular basis, and along with Andy Enfield, and I don't talk to Bill Self as much, but Bill was on my staff at Oklahoma State. You know, I feel very fortunate to have had the intuition to hire great, smart people who helped me be where I am today, and those guys have moved on and doing great jobs from where they are. I mean, I can't take all the credit for that because those guys were super sharp coming in, but I am proud of the fact that the guys who come through our program are going on and having a lot of success.
Leonard Hamilton, my guest. Listen, one last thought. Last night you were part of a panel on the ACC Network, and you were talking about social justice and racial equality. What did you take away from that conversation?
Well, I'm a proponent, Jim, of doing something substantial. You know, there's a lot of symbolic gestures that we make, you know, that I think raises the consciousness of people. But until we have a movement where the federal government mandates an official, organized, thorough program to understand how do we get to this point and why we're where we are and how is it affecting our society and what is the plan for us to improve it or correct it. Right now, we just got so many different agencies and so many different people doing their thing. And it means an awful lot to be doing that. But until it comes down from the top, I'm not real sure we're ever going to be like a dog chasing his tail, going around and around in circles. Because if you remember correctly, back in the mid-60s, we had the Kerner Commission who did an authentic, thorough study, but we never used the information that was gathered. I mean, we're in a very interesting way now where we are discriminating against people who we don't even know. I mean, in other words, and so even in our school systems, in our education system, there's nothing going on in our education system that gives us an opportunity how to deal with conflict resolution. How do you relate to people who don't look like you or who don't act like you? How can we just come up with a way how we get along? And right now, I mean, when I look around and see a lot of our politicians saying, what are y'all talking about? There's no problems in our society. Everything's fine. Well, we got a problem.
So, Leonard, are you hopeful and optimistic, or are you frustrated?
I'm a little bit of all. We have good people that are trying, but it's not official, and we're not all on the same page. I mean, we can put guys on the moon. We can't figure out how to get along. Something wrong with that picture.
So, CEO and all-around genius Kevin Mather resigned yesterday after the comments he made to the Rotary Club had surfaced and exposed him for who and what he is. As a mini refresher, Mather, one of the architects behind the longest postseason drought in baseball, called one of the most important players on the team overpaid, called the best pitcher, quote, very boring. He also seemed to admit manipulating service time with the organization's best prospects. He criticized an all-star from Japan and an elite prospect from the Dominican Republic for their skills in a second language. And why did he do all this? To impress a bunch of Rotarians. Team chairman and managing partner John Stanton said yesterday that he was, quote, extremely disappointed, end quote, when he heard what Mather had to say.
His comments were inappropriate and do not reflect our organization's feelings about our players, our staff, or our fans. There is no excuse for what was said, and I will not try to make one. I offer my sincere apology on behalf of the club and my partners to our players and our fans. We must do and we must be better. We have a lot of work to do to make amends, and that work is already underway.
And isn't this how this always goes? The boss who made the comments resigns. The boss's boss says they're inappropriate and do not represent the club, and they hope that everybody moves on. Except that doesn't quite work, not here, because Mather's comments do represent the team. He was the president and CEO of the team. If the president and the CEO of the team does not represent the team and set that team's culture, then who does? This wasn't some doofus mid-level manager spouting off on Twitter. This was your president and CEO running his mouth to impress a couple of dozen Rotarians. He was showing how big league he is by bragging about messing with service time, clowning international players, and even used the word tummy in public, which in and of itself is a fireable offense.
My big tummy out there in left field.
The issue is not that Kevin Mather said this on camera and that somehow that footage leaked. The issue is he said it, and he said it because he believes it. The problem is not that he got caught on a hot mic. The problem is the belief system in the first place and that he acted on it. These were beliefs that he had and that guided how he approached his job and how he ran the team as team president and CEO. This is not some rando working in the souvenir shop or selling beer and peanuts at the yard. This is your team president and CEO. So there's no way that nobody around Kevin Mather didn't know that this is the way he thought. In what organization do people not know how the president and the CEO thinks? Everybody in every organization knows what the boss thinks and what the boss wants. That's how it works. Everybody knows what the boss believes and how the boss wants that organization to behave and conduct itself. So there's absolutely no way that John Stanton and everybody else associated with the Mariners didn't know. It's not like you break out your new material for the Bellevue Rotarians. Trust this, Mather was out there playing his greatest hits. But now Stanton and the rest of the organization are absolutely shocked. I mean shocked to learn that Mather is wired this way. Hell no. I mean, come on. I don't buy that bullcrap, and neither should you. The issue now is the rest of us know what Stanton and the others already knew about Mather. The issue is the rest of the world knows the Mariners' values and their feelings about their players, their staff, and their fans. Because if the president and the CEO doesn't embody the values of the organization, well, he also creates them and he sets them. But keep in mind, not everybody's pissed. Not everybody's pissed. Josh Donaldson, for instance, is happy about it. He's happy in the sense that this guy admitted to manipulating service time. He tweeted, quote, "Thank you, Kevin Mather. I sincerely mean it. You just said what everyone already knew. But now we, MLBPA, have official evidence that is going to help a lot of players. Again, thank you. Bravo." End of tweet. Yeah, I guarantee you he's not the only decision maker in baseball or in the Mariners organization who thinks about service time and international players the way this guy does. This is why it's a complete joke for Stanton to say, quote, "This does not represent our organization's feelings about our players, staff, and fans." Hey, John, if the president and CEO does not represent the organization's feelings about your players, staff, and fans, then who the hell does? And if you've been following along closely, you might also remember Stanton from statements that he made back in July 2018. Quote, "Today the Seattle Times published a story about the Seattle Mariners' workplace environment. We do not believe it accurately reflects the values and culture of our organization." End quote. Isn't that exactly the thing he just said? That was the opening to a statement about accusations of sexual harassment directed by three Mariner executives by multiple female employees. I'm not going to read you the entire statement from Stanton. I'll just skip to the part that has a subheading of its own. Quote, "Issues involving Mariners president and CEO Kevin Mather." Like, I'm not going to say there's a problem with the Mariners, but when you have to put out multiple statements about issues involving your president and CEO, maybe there is a problem with the Mariners. And it's part of that statement from 2018. Quote, nearly 10 years ago, two female former Mariners employees complained of inappropriate language and treatment in the workplace by then executive VP Kevin Mather. So he was accused of sexual harassment, and according to reports, settlements of more than $500,000 were paid out. And yet this guy was later promoted to team president and then to team CEO. So you guys knew exactly who this guy was, and yet you still kept him around. I hate to say it, but these are the values of your organization. If you keep a guy like that around and you promote him, that's who you are. And on top of that, it's not like you can point to some crazy track record on the field and say, yeah, you know, this guy was accused of sexual harassment, and he manipulates service time, and he makes fun of people learning English as a second language. But man, he is killing it on the field, because he's not. The Mariners have been fine with sucking and with having lousy guys around. So again, the issue was not that he was on camera when he said this junk. It's that he believes this junk. And he's been with the organization for years and was promoted repeatedly. Mather did not get caught on that video call. The entire Mariners organization did. Same as they ever were. Embarrassing. And per usual, hope that was worth it. You're unique, and so are your taxes. TurboTax Live is experienced tax experts who listen to you, learn about your unique tax situations, and answer your questions. And on top of all that, they can do your taxes from start to finish. Maybe you began investing and you want some reassurance from an expert that you're doing things the right way. Or maybe now you're self-employed and you need some expert advice on what qualifies as a home office deduction. Or maybe you'd rather have an expert file your taxes for you so you can focus on what matters most. No matter what your situation is, TurboTax Live tax experts can answer all of your questions, give tax advice, review your return before you file, or even do it all for you. TurboTax Live gives you confidence that your uniquely you taxes are done right. Intuit TurboTax Live. File with the help of an expert or let an expert file for you. He is Kenyon Drake. Kenyon, good to have you back. How are you?
Pretty good, Jim. Thanks for having me back.
Good to have you back. Let me check in on you and your pups. How are your dogs, Tyson and Maxine, doing these days?
Man, the pups are good, man. Getting bigger every day. Mama Bear Maxine is just, the matriarch of the house. She does what she wants when she wants, and Tyson is the baby, so he just gets spoiled. It's a great life to live.
It is a great life to live. I love it. All right, so you're coming off a year where you rushed for 955 yards. I would, if it were me, Kenyon, I'd round that thing right up to 1,000. So I'd ask you how it feels to have a 1,000-yard season, except you posted the other day a video of yourself training with the caption, 45 yards short of 1K last year. So how much does coming that close motivate you to hit it even harder in the offseason?
Yes, it's a great motivating factor. And more importantly, from a team standpoint, just because, like you mentioned before, I'm used to being a champion. You know what I mean? I played at Alabama, surrounded by a bunch of great men, and they helped elevate my game to where I am today. And that motivation and that attention to detail and that pursuit of perfection that I learned there is something that I take heed to every day as I'm in this league, in this position, to go out there and showcase my skills. So falling short of that milestone, that benchmark is definitely something that kind of ate at me as the season ended. But more importantly, like I was saying, I wanted to get to the playoffs. I know the Cardinals hadn't made the playoffs in 4 or 5 years, and we fell short of that goal after starting like 6-2. So that's definitely another motivating factor, is just to kind of get to that point to where, you know, we can get to the playoffs, because at that point anything can happen.
Kenyon Drake joining us. All right, so let me follow you up on that. The team did take a big step forward last season. You got off that great start, but as you just mentioned, it did not end the way you would have liked. But what did you make of the offense this past year, and in particular, how Kyler Murray led that offense in his second year?
Yeah, the offense made big strides and bounds from the year before. Continued to learn, especially within the circumstances. I mean, everybody else had to obviously deal with the circumstances as well. You know, shout out to everybody that's kind of out here fighting through the pandemic and making the most of the situation. But nobody knew if we were going to have football season. And we were able to kind of go out there, and some games we really flashed, was able to, you know, make big plays, and some games we fell short of our expectations to a great degree. So just find that consistency, and I'm sure he would mirror that sentiment. Find that consistency and doing it game in and game out is what makes great team and great players great. And I'm sure he's doing all he can to, you know, continue to build upon the success he's had. And I'm looking forward to him continue to be the great superstar he will be in this league.
Kenyon Drake, my guest. Now, when you came over to Arizona after your time in Miami, you took your game to a new level this past season, which was your first season as a full-blown featured back. What was that experience like for you? And then how much did it mean to you to have that opportunity to show the rest of the league what you could do with an opportunity like that?
Yeah, it meant a lot to me. And I'm very appreciative of Cliff Kingsbury, Bidwell, Kime, just all the guys there, you know, with the decision making to, you know, give me that opportunity. And, you know, I felt like I went out there and I, you know, did the most what I could with the opportunity. Like I said, fell short of certain, you know, statistical goals that I set for myself. 10 rushing touchdowns is something that I'm very proud of. And I know the guys, you know, in front of me also are very proud of that. But I know 45 yards short of 1,000 yards left a bad taste in all of my mouth who was involved with the running game. So, you know, just want to continue to build upon that. You know, showed I could run between the tackles, showed I can be, you know, that type of back. But, you know, my game in itself, I feel still remains on my versatility, being able to, you know, make plays in space. But also, like you said, I was able to show that I can be a every down back. And you know, can't do it on my own, man. You know, got a bunch of great guys in the room with me, including Chase Edmonds, DJ Foster, you know, Benjamin, Jonathan, just a bunch of great guys that I was able to lean on personally in those times where I felt like, you know, I wasn't doing enough. They helped me to continue to persevere and continue to lead that running game as best as I could.
We're talking to Kenyon Drake. So it seems to me, and from what I'm hearing, you like it there. You like it there. You're comfortable there. You like the opportunity. You've got some unfinished business. But you did play this season on the transition tag, and you are scheduled to be a free agent next month, and there are going to be some decisions coming up in your future. So how are you going about evaluating the options in front of you, and what are you hoping to see in terms of an opportunity?
Yeah, I'm really just taking everything a day at a time right now. You know, enjoying the off season as I can in the capacity that we know we're allowed with the pandemic, but also just kind of, you know, making sure that I'm building a good base for what I expect my body to feel like and look like once kind of start ramping it up a little bit more. You know, like I got mentioned before earlier talking on the Good Morning Football show. I just, you know, put everything, you know, in the hands of the people whose job it is to, you know, continue to put me in that best situation from that contractual standpoint with Sports Trust and Pat Dye Jr. and my marketing reps there. They do a great job, done a great job so far in my career. Going to continue to have support and trust and, you know, their decision making. Obviously, we're going to be head in head with that. But, you know, like I said, just focusing on what I can control right now. Did what I could on the field, doing what I can right now in the offseason. And once we cross that bridge, we'll see what the future holds for me.
All right. So, one more thought about that bridge. I mean, fit is so important, but so is getting what you're worth on the open market. So would you be willing to take a hometown discount to stay in Arizona, or do you owe it to yourself to see what's out there?
Yeah, man, that's really a great question. You know, it was a weird year in a sense to me being on the transition tag and feeling like another contract year, because I felt like I played pretty well at the end of the last year. You know, still trying to find my footing in the consistency of, you know, the running game. And then this year, I felt like I put too much pressure on myself to go out there and just make plays continuously instead of just playing ball, letting the game come to me. That's something that I've been trying to get a footing with in my entire career, to be honest, because I'm used to being a home run hitter, you know, coming in, making a spark. But when, you know, you got the brunt of the running game on your shoulders, the most important thing you can do is just be consistent, going out there, down in and down out, getting the yards that are there, and, you know, not trying to put too much pressure on yourself to make too many big plays that aren't there. That's a testament to just my maturity and continuing to see myself build my running game, my repertoire up in that degree. So I guess with a long-winded answer, I don't know. I would love the opportunity to come back to Arizona, but also do want to get the most of what I feel like I deserve. So we'll see.
Kenyon Drake's my guest. You know, one of the things I appreciate about the conversation you and I had last summer is the fact that we could talk about things away from football. As an example, you recently did a master class with NASA astronauts. How did that come to be? How did you get into space, astronomy, and aeronautics?
Yeah, I've always had a calling to it, I guess, per se. Now, my mathematics and science background didn't necessarily allow me to kind of go into that field. So luckily, my athletic ability and, things of that sort was able to make up for what I lacked in that degree. But I've always had a love for outer space, for science, for just the things that astronauts and scientists do for the world and expanding our horizons. So given that opportunity, with the platform that I have, I feel like you can almost be able to reach into different bags. If I didn't have this blessing of a platform being an NFL player. So my marketing rep was able to reach out to NASA. I've done a couple of you wouldn't think that NASA needs any type of social media boost from myself personally, but, you know, they were open arms to me promoting things that they were doing on their social media platform, and they opened up the chance for me to just be a fly on the wall on a Zoom meeting call with scientists and personnel that are leading the charge for the Perseverance rover that just recently landed in Mars. So congratulations to the success of humanity for that. And, it was just a great thing to be a part of, and just to listen and just soak in knowledge of people that are literally out of this world.
Literally out of this world. I'm glad you mentioned it like that. So when you talk about people that are literally out of this world and other horizons, I'm not sure how much thought you've given to this, but if you had to say, do you believe there are other forms of life somewhere out there?
Yes, of course. I would be doing a disservice to not only myself and my beliefs, but just what we are as, you know, beings in this vast, vast universe, man. I mean, there are so many opportunities in this our own world to be whatever we want to be. So then once you think about the vastness of space and just the possibilities of what could be out there, like, it's limitless. So you can't say that we're the only one. I can't say intelligent life, because we don't know, but there's for sure, you know, somewhere where there's microbial life beings, you know, forming, you know, maybe they kind of, you know, had their life cycle go through and pass with a dying sun that, you know, went through its life cycle, and maybe there's just so many things that we don't know. If you look out into that vast darkness out there and you see those stars, lights coming to you, that's literally a picture of the light that at that time, what it looked like. And that was the stars are hundreds of millions of light years from us from now. We don't even know what it looks like in the present day. That's just what the picture looks like from that time frame. So So it's crazy to really think about the vastness of space.
My man. Yeah, I don't know for certain. I've never actually seen it with my two eyes. I would think it would be pretty arrogant to think we're the only ones. Listen, you're an ambassador for Smile Train. For those who do not know, what is Smile Train all about? How did you first get involved with that?
Yeah, Smile Train is a nonprofit organization that benefits cleft lip and cleft palate victims. Well, I can't say victims. They're really born that way. And that's something that means dear to my heart because, you know, I was blessed to be born, you know, with the ability to run, jump, speak, just, you know, little things that we take for granted. And when you have a hole in your mouth or a hole in your lip, it prevents you from having, you know, perfect speech, being able to eat, drink, just a lot of different things that we take for granted. And with it being a very cheap surgery, a donation of like a little over $100 to help somebody who literally changed their whole life around, from kids to adults. And I was able to visit Brazil, Rio de Janeiro to be exact, and I also visited Mexico City like 2-3 years ago now. Was planning on going to Peru, but obviously COVID put a stop to that. So I'm just excited to continue to be an ambassador now, just from a distance in terms of just using my platform to continue to push out their goals and dreams of continuing to make this world a better place.
Good for you. Arizona Cardinals running back Kenyon Drake, my guest, two-time national champion from Alabama as well. He is a Smile Train ambassador and much more. Kenyon, appreciate you. Great to have you back on the show. Thanks so much. Let's be sure we do it again soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me on as always.
Remember back in January, new topic, segue. Back in January when the Lions introduced their new head coach, Dan Campbell, he started reading like a manifesto for the team's new identity from a recycled copy of The Walking Dead pilot, I think.
We're going to kick you in the teeth, all right? And when you punch us back, we're going to smile at you. And when you knock us down, we're going to get up. And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off, all right? And we're going to stand up. And then it's going to take two more shots to knock us down, all right? And on the way up, we're going to take your other kneecap, and we're going to get up. And then it's going to take three shots to get us down. And when we do, we're going to take another hunk out of you. Before long, we're going to be the last one standing, all right? That's going to be the mentality, all right?
Easy, Dahmer. I don't know what's more frightening, Dan Campbell threatening to bite off kneecaps at an alarming rate, or Dan Campbell dropping the word, all right, 5 times in 20 seconds.
All right, all right, all right, all right, all right.
All right, all right.
All right.
All right. All right, that was then, all right? And all this right. is now. All right. Dan Campbell is addressing that cannibalistic zombie presser for the first time since. And if you think my man has lost his taste for kneecaps, all right, you'd be wrong. Because Campbell has seen the headlines. He knows his rap. And he told Michigan Live yesterday, quote, "I love the fact that we're only known as meatheads. I'm a meathead. I have limited brain capacity. I like that people think that. I'm good with that. I have zero problem with that," end quote. In other words, get this man his fork and knife and a pound of human flesh, literally, because he is hungry and he's going to eat. Hey, listen, I'm all about this. There's nothing more annoying and more lame when somebody walks back something and spins that same tired lie about how, yeah, well, I said it, but I didn't mean it. That's not who I am. That's not what I represent. It doesn't represent the people I work for. Never mind that it came from their own Gap. And when he said it, he was draped with company logos. If that doesn't represent you and who you work for, then what does? But you hear it all the time, right? Somebody says something regrettable and they start backpedaling, assuring you, no, that's not what I mean. That is not what I mean. Wait, what you said is not what you mean. Except Dan Hannibal the Cannibal Campbell is out here saying, I love that everybody thinks that I'm some dumb meathead. In fact, I've got no problem with that at all. I'm happy for it. And personally, I have less than no problem with Danny Dahmer leaning into it. In fact, I love it. If you're going to threaten to eat your opponent, you better be fine with the response. And he is. and I see him working. He's telling the world, if you want to write me off as some dumb lunk with a half brain because of my presser, you go right ahead and do that. Sleep on me at your own peril. It's actually kind of awesome. He's turned the reaction to that bizarre introduction into fuel and a thinly veiled warning. And he's also turned it into extreme ownership, which I am all about. If you say something like that, own it. Dive in. Be that guy. Even if that guy is a meathead cannibal who says, all right, every 4 seconds.
All right, all right, all right, all right, all right.
All right, all right.
All right.
You think I'm a meathead? Good, all right?
All right.
Why don't we go to the Urban Dictionary for the most legitimate definition of meathead? The UD defines meathead as, quote, an enormously muscular guy who cannot hold a conversation about anything other than weightlifting and protein shakes. He gets upset very quickly when he cannot complete his own sentences and thoughts. You'll find him at a nightclub wearing shirts that are 10 sizes too small. End of definition. So Dan Campbell's got zero problem with anybody thinking he's exactly that. Let's check it out. Enormously muscular guy. Check. My man goes 6'5", 265. He's made out of granite. Can't hold a conversation about anything other than protein. Check. According to Nutrition Facts, kneecaps are in fact 100% lean protein. Clean, burning fuel. Quote, gets frustrated when he can't finish his thoughts. Well, I mean, he does say all right where the punctuation is supposed to go.
All right.
Check.
All right. All right. All right. All right.
Quote, you'll find him at a nightclub wearing shirts 10 sizes too small. Check. Mate. Go peep this dude in Miami, roaming the sidelines as the Dolphins interim head coach back in 2015. Those polo shirts never stood a chance. Anyway, my man, DD, Danny Dahmer, I'm all about you embracing the meathead gloss and running with it. Man, it's actually a good look. And it's about time somebody stood by what they said. The last dude in Detroit was not a meathead. Just a guy who seemed to really enjoy meat and all other foods. And instead of owning things with reporters, he was just scolding them for their posture.
Well, you know, do me a favor, just kind of sit up and just like have a little respect for the process. Every day you come in and ask me questions and you just kind of like, you know, give me this. But I mean, like, just be a little respectful. I'm asking just to be a little respectful in this whole process, okay? So ask me a question professionally and I'll answer it for you.
I mean, Detroit, after you hear that, after we run that back, man, how much better does this sound right about now?
We're going to kick you in the teeth, all right? And when you punch us back, we're going to smile at you. And when you knock us down, we're going to get up. And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off, all right? And we're going to stand up. And then it's going to take two more shots to knock us down, all right? And on the way up, we're going to take your other kneecap, and we're going to get up. And then it's going to take three shots to get us down. And when we do, we're going to take another hunk out of you. Before long, we're going to be the last one standing. All right, that's going to be the mentality. All right.
All right. All right. I'm telling you, I would take that guy over Fat Matt Pat.
Fat?
Any day.
All right.
In fact, I'm starting to really like this guy. I'm starting to really like this guy.
All right.
Coach him up, Dahmer.
All right.
All right. I like
it. All right,
I love that he didn't walk that back. I love that he leaned into it. Leaned into it, man. He dove into it. Yeah, good. You think I'm a meathead? Right, I am. You think I'm a dumb lunk? Right, I'm that too. Dan Wojcicki. Dan, what's going on, man? How are you?
Tim, I'm good. Happy New Year belated, I guess, right? And hope you're well.
Same with you, Dan. Good to have you back. All right, so if you're a Laker fan, how concerned would you be after watching them blow a 17-point lead last night and losing to Washington in OT?
I don't know that I'd be concerned as much as I'd be confused, I think would be kind of the place that I would be. Because on one hand, you look over and you see Anthony Davis in street clothes. You know Dennis Schroeder is at home in a quarantine. after being exposed to COVID and isn't on the team. So you're missing 40% of your starting lineup, right? Like, your second and third best starters are not there. And you know that that's a lot of firepower that you don't have. So that part of it, I think, would kind of lower the expectation bar. But then you're right. I mean, you see a team that is good enough to go up 17, is good enough to seemingly like slam the brakes on this losing streak, and then watching it all sort of fall apart as they just looked. I mean, to me, Jim, they look tired. And it makes sense when you consider the sort of the year they've had, the offseason they didn't have, the year that a lot of them had last year playing, you know, deep, obviously the deepest team, last team left standing in the bubble. You know, you start to wonder if like a little of this is just sort of cumulative fatigue, if this is sort of the grind of the season. And, you know, when you're a little shorthanded, it's harder to grind it out.
Dan Warkey's joining us. So, Dan, that brings us, of course, to LeBron, who made it very, yep, very clear after the game. He does not feel like he's being played too many minutes, even though he was over 40 minutes again. That's the fourth time this season. I mean, like, Dan, he's in amazing shape. Nobody would ever dispute that. But he's coming off the shortest offseason of his career. He's currently playing without AD and Dennis Schroeder. Doesn't it stand that there's got to be a breaking point somewhere, even for an outlier like LeBron?
Right. I mean, he's managed to fight this off longer than any player that I can think of, and he may continue to fight it off. But you're right. I mean, like, not only has it been four games, Jim, this year that he's played over 40 minutes, last year in the regular season, he only did it twice. You know, so things are not trending wildly positively on that front. And guess what? When they play Utah on Wednesday night, if that game's close, if that game pushes somehow into overtime again, you can expect LeBron to be on the court for that too. It's just sort of his competitiveness, the work that he does put in to be in that place physically. But look, when you watch him night in, night out, you do see the signs. You see, I think physically, obviously, his legs are a really easy thing you can tie to kind of the shooting over the last 10 games, you know, under 30%, closer to 20% really from deep. He was 2 for 10 last night. He misses a potential game-winning free throw short. But I also see, like, the mental stuff, you know, the turnovers. He fouled Russell Westbrook last night in overtime, Jim. Westbrook beat the Lakers to the basket. It was a situation where they needed to foul really quickly. They were down, I believe at the time they were down one. And at that point, like, LeBron's probably a top two or three smart player in the NBA. At that point, the smart thing to do is just let Westbrook score. You know, fouling him lightly, and the worst thing that can happen is a three-point play. And LeBron fouled him lightly. Westbrook made the layup. Thankfully for the Lakers, he missed the free throw, so they still had a chance to tie. But it was just like an uncharacteristically, like, pretty not smart basketball play. And to me, that's a sign of mental fatigue, too. And I think, you know, the usage and stuff is up. But the Lakers, Jim, are in this really unique situation right now. I was just kind of running through some data over these last three games during this losing streak. And it's like, you know, the only lineups they're really having success with are the ones where LeBron James is on the court. And it's not even close. When he leaves the floor, like, they have been awful in this stretch. And so if you're the Lakers, kind of, how do you balance that big picture with sort of the need to you know, still win games along the way? It's a really interesting position there.
It really is. Dan Warkey is joining us. You know, you had a really interesting piece earlier this month on his ability to play at the level that he is after all this time.
Yeah.
When you were talking to head coaches around the league, what did they tell you about the level that he's still playing at right now?
I mean, he's an MVP candidate, right? And he, you know, may even be still the best player in the league. I think coaches see when LeBron goes to that, like, A-game-like place, it's a level that very few other guys can get to, both physically and mentally and even, like, competitively, right? It's sort of this weird kind of combination of everything at the same time. I feel very good about the fact that I wrote that story, hit send, and then I think he's maybe made, like, three three-pointers since then. I feel a little bit better. But you know, it was, you know, the shooting early in the season was a really impressive sort of added wrinkle to his game. The smarts are at such just a, you know, another level. And you know, physically, like, this is a guy that doesn't really ultimately slow down that much. I know we're talking about kind of the cumulative minutes, but he's a guy that's still out there every game. It's wild to think that this is still the best version LeBron James. But look, if you talk to people that were in the bubble and I was there, and and you talk to other coaches and stuff, he was the best player in the bubble. And that's wild. And I think it's certainly conceivable that when the games matter most again this year, he might be the best player again. And that's just an incredible testament to his longevity and his ability to continuously deliver when the expectations are so high.
We were talking to Dan Wojcicki for a few more moments. Dan, you mentioned the Utah Jazz. So the Lakers are a different team this year than they were last year. But what do you make of what you've seen from Utah so far this season?
I mean, it's one of my favorite eight-man rotations in the NBA. I think they just all make such sense together, Jim. It's like, you know, you especially in the league right now, as you look around and you see teams that have so many, like, just stars, like, flat out, like, you know, all capital letter superstars. And the Jazz have some great all-NBA type players, don't get me wrong. But it does feel like it's a much more kind of cumulative thing, that it's a group that just fits together and everybody sort of elevates one another. Anybody who's around the NBA loves Mike Conley. So I think watching Mike Conley play well is something that everybody's happy about. I really hope that tonight he hears his name as an all-star reserve. I think he certainly deserves it. The Jazz probably deserve three guys. They've been just a fantastic team to this point. I think some people still have questions about, you know, can they get over the hump in a playoff series when they don't have the best player, which is sort of that, you know, easy way to sort of pick a playoff series, because they're going to play a lot of playoff series where they don't have the single best player. But they might always have the best team and the best kind of group of guys. So it'll be really interesting to see how that sort of matches up with some of the individual star power that's out in the Western Conference.
Hey, Dan, where do you come out on Quinn Snyder? How good of a coach is he in your mind?
Top tier.
Right. Me too.
I think he's in that elite class of NBA coaches. You know, it's funny. I remember once sitting in gym in your green room in the old TV studios talking to, I think it was Darren Collison at the time. We were talking about how there's really only a handful of NBA coaches who make like a huge difference. And, you know, Quinn Snyder is certainly in that class. I think just consistently his teams are so well organized. And they're a team that's also benefiting from a lot of continuity and a clear understanding of what they want to do. And that's a credit to their front office, and it's a credit to their coaching staff.
All right, so before I let you go, what about the Clippers? How does this year's Clippers team compare to the Clippers team that imploded last year?
I mean, I think obviously they've added some shooting, which is important. I really think that the Serge Ibaka for Montrezl Harrell flip for them was a really important one, that they got a player championship tested, certainly has played in tons of big games, certainly more defensive minded than Montrezl Harrell, which is something the Lakers are kind of dealing with right now a little bit. That made a lot of sense to me. I still think that they've got backcourt questions. Obviously some health questions always that'll persist, but you know, they seem to be a team that's like more equipped for the playoffs, but I am very firmly in I'll believe it when I see it territory with the Clippers. I just, Jim, I feel like I've seen too much over the years. I've seen that rug pulled out from underneath them so many times that it's, you know, the burden of proof is now on them. But I think they put themselves in the position in a year where, I mean, look, they, you know, that game against Utah was terrific. They played great. The Brooklyn game was really, really fun. You know, a call maybe away from that game being a little differently, and they're in a good spot.
Dan, before you go, let me ask you, as a working journo, as you mentioned, you were in the bubble and we're still amidst the pandemic, and the way you do your job is very different now than the way you used to do your job. And you know, Doc Rivers, what an unbelievable moment that was on that Zoom call a few days back when he hit Jackson Frank with that JC blast for asking a question from his bed. What was your reaction to that?
I mean, it's terrifying. I mean, as like a reporter, like I'm very locked into like trying to be in a very specific place in my home that where it looks like sort of professional, but every once in a while, like, you know, I'll be on the couch or something like that. And, you know, maybe in some sweats or something, and you get a little nervous that you're going to get caught in an embarrassing, not like a compromising, like, you know, tubing situation, but like something where you're just going to look stupid. And it's happened for sure. I think for me, like the best sort of moment was Frank Vogel was talking about how they were going to have to like talk faster during timeouts and meetings because the NBA had like limited sort of, you know, as part of the COVID protocols, limited the time they would have together. And I kind of cracked that they should maybe hire the guy from the Micro Machines commercials, which is a reference that I thought was just spot on. Nobody knew what I was talking about. It was total crickets on the Zoom. And, like, you're not even in a position where you can save yourself. You just have to sit in it and just sit in your horrible joke and just live in it while everybody just kind of stares at you. You're not sure if the screen's frozen. No, it's just a bad joke, and you just got to live with it. It's I want to get back and see people in person where I can embarrass myself with my references, at least in eye to eye.
Yeah, but Dan, the thing is, if it'll make you feel better, maybe you had to wear that one. However, you just very casually inserting a Tubin reference is going to make clones worldwide very, very happy. So you just bought yourself a lot of goodwill with them, if that'll make you feel better.
If I can get a fast talker and a Jeffrey Tubin reference in the same interview, Jim, I consider this a success.
There you go. It always is. He is an NBA reporter for the LA Times. He is all over the LA Lakers. He is a good friend of the program. Dan Wojcicki, my guest. Good job, Dan. Great to have you back. Thanks so much.
All right, Jim. Be good.
Good night now.